One of the fundamental principles of our Masorah, of our tradition, is that hafochba vafochba dekulaba. One has to just turn the Torah a little bit, sometimes upside down, to try to look and to delve and to try to find sources in the most ancient of texts, sugyas that were written hundreds and thousands of years before particular technology has been developed. And yet one can find within the Torah itself, within the Torah Sheba Peh, sources and discussions and relevant issues in order to paskin very, very really modern contemporary shailas. So I think a good example of this is an overall kind of an overview of issues relating to technology and particularly electricity on Shabbos and Yom Tov. The issue of electricity on Shabbos is not a new issue. It's already been a subject of much discussion for quite some time, well over 100 years now. But nevertheless, it is important for us to take a step back and to really go back to, in a sense, the Aleph Beis of the sugya of electricity on Shabbos, and to understand how issues related to electricity play out in terms of modern-day shailas. So we're going to try to really break up the shiur into two different categories. We'll first try to learn through the sugya itself, through the topic itself, through the eyes of the Gemara, through the eyes of the Rishonim, through the eyes of the Shulchan Aruch and the Gedolei HaPoskim. And then afterwards we're going to try to extract some of these basic principles to issues that relate to each and every one of us. Issues relating to, just to throw out a few, depending on how much time we'll have, issues relating to refrigerators, issues relating to motion detectors, to ovens, assorted other odds and ends on Shabbos and Yom Tov. So let's start really with the ABCs. We're going to start with the first of the Maamar Kohen, the first of the sources. There's a comment of the Rambam in Hilcha Shabbos, Perek Yudbeis, Halacha Aleph. The Rambam tells us, "Abachamim is a barzel, kedei letzorfo b'mayim, arei ze toldos mavir v'chayev." If a person heats up a piece of metal, iron, but not literally iron, but any kind of metal on Shabbos, Rambam describes why a person would want to do such a thing, so he refers back to a procedure that probably is not all that relevant for us, the Tzarfa B'mayim. We're going to focus on what the person is doing rather than why he's doing it. A person is heating up a piece of metal, HaRei Toldos Mavir, that is considered to fall under the category of Malacha called Havara Mavir, not to kindle a flame. The Torah tells us explicitly, Lo Sivaru Eish B'chom HaShveseichem Yom HaShabbos, it is an absolute Torah prohibition, as we're all familiar with, to make a fire on Shabbos. And the Rambam tells us a fire does not only mean striking a match, or doesn't only mean rubbing two sticks together, but a fire also can refer to a piece of metal that is getting hot, that is glowing, that is also considered to be part of the Malacha min HaTorah of Havara. Why would one think otherwise? So there are some who suggested, maybe one could argue, that the definition of a flame, the definition of a fire on Shabbos means when something is physically getting consumed, that actually we can see that it's getting consumed. For example, when you light a candle, so you can see the wax is burning. Even when you drive a car, so the gas is being consumed. In case you don't think it is, so go to the gas pump next time and you'll notice that it costs a lot of money. So one could potentially have suggested that when one heats up a piece of metal, one doesn't really sense that anything is being consumed, nothing is being destroyed, at least not visible to the eye. Maybe one could have argued that's not considered to be Havara. So the Rambam tells us that that in fact is not the case. That is also considered to be Havara. As long as the metal is glowing and heated, providing light and warmth, etc., that is sufficient to be labeled as Havara, as lighting a fire, even on a level of Torah law. There are some acharonim who suggested an interesting hint, a little bit of an allusion to this idea. The Torah says in Parsha Shmos, "V'hinei hasneh bo'er bo'esh, v'hasneh einenu ukal," the burning bush. So it was burning, it was on fire, bo'esh, but it wasn't being eaten up, it wasn't being consumed, and it's still called an esh. You can pull it, a good rhyme, not a good rhyme. Okay, but we're not here right now about the sneh. Bottom line is that we assume that the statement of the Rambam stands on its own, whether the raya is a valid raya or not. It is this statement of the Rambam and others who follow in the footsteps of the Rambam that became the first basic discussion in the earlier Acharonim, over 100 years ago, when electricity became relevant. The Gedolei HaPoskim in Europe, who discussed electricity, came to the following conclusion, that when one turns on an electric light, at least right now we're limiting ourselves to the simple lights, one turns on a regular electric bulb, and at least an old-style bulb, a incandescent bulb, that is considered to be Havara min HaTorah, and that was pretty much not negotiable. There was a discussion about it, an alumnus about it, but the bottom line is, Nimnu V'Gomru, the consensus of view of the Gedolei HaPoskim of several generations ago, that turning on an electric light on Shabbos is an absolute Torah prohibition. to such an extent that there was actually a practice that was followed by Reb Chaim Oizer. Reb Chaim Oizer was one of the Gedolei HaPoskim in Europe right before World War II. Reb Chaim Oizer on Motzei Shabbos would recite the Baruch of Borei Me'or HaEish specifically on a light bulb. Why did he do that? He wanted to show everybody this is the real McCoy, this is the real thing. Nobody should think that Chas Shalom could turn on lights on Shabbos. So again, today we don't have to make that statement, public statement anymore. Most of us probably don't use light bulbs for Borei Me'or HaEish for other reasons, but Reb Chaim Oizer was so convinced that it's an absolute Eish min HaTorah, even for the purposes of the Bracha Borei Me'or HaEish. However, the question was raised that what about electricity in other contexts? What about electricity? It doesn't involve the turning on of lights. There are many electric devices that don't involve lights, don't involve the Melach of Havara per se. Where do they fit into in terms of the realm of Hilcha Shabbos? So there was a statement by the Chazanish and the second of the Marmakomos. The Chazanish, in his commentary on Arachayim and Simen Nun Ostes, suggests as follows: Od yesh b'ze b'shum tikun mona kaven shama ma'amido al tchunoso lizrom ezerem hachashmal b'tmidus. Says the Chazon Ish, any use of electricity may fall under another category of halacha, such as fixing something. As you have, for argument's sake, you have a fan, and the fan right now is not working. It's not working because it's not plugged in, or it's not working because it's not turned on. And when you complete the circuit and you in effect transform this fan into something that's now going to be working, says the Chazon Ish, that's a very serious problem. Says the Chazon Ish, it would appear to him that just the mere completing of an electric circuit is a violation of a completely different melacha, nothing to do with lights. Lights is odiyah shlomo, that's a different issue. But even those devices which do not have lights are prohibited min haTorah because of bona, that's considered to be building, constructing. It's like a person who makes a vessel. If you take something from scratch and you make a vessel, you make a kli, that's a melacha min haTorah, a Torah prohibition of bona of construction. For kol shekein kan shekol achutin mechubar in labayis v'hav lekebona b'mechubar. So says the Chazon Ish, and this is even more severe than merely building a vessel. The Gemara Masechta Shabbos discusses the difference between a kli versus karka, something which is part of a structure, part of something which is connected to the ground, is the ultimate prohibition of bona. It's literally like building a house or knocking into something, fixing a door, etc. Anything that's connected to the ground is an absolute Torah prohibition to fix on Shabbos. And therefore the Chazon Ish says, since the wires are all connected to the ground, everything's connected to the ground, that's going to fall into the category here as well of bona min haTorah. So this was a famous opinion of the Chazon Ish, where the Chazon Ish said that not only are lights prohibited min haTorah because of Havara, but other devices are prohibited min haTorah as well because of bona. So it's this second point, this chiddush of the Chazon Ish, that not everybody agreed to. At the time, there was a response that was written to the Chazon Ish by a young man in Yerushalayim, going way, way back into the, remember the precise year, but it was written by an individual who was pretty much unknown at the time. His name was, at the time, he was known as Shlomo Zalman Orbach. Later, of course, became the Rav Shlomo Zalman Orbach. And Rav Shlomo Zalman, as a younger man, took issue with this argument of the Chazon Ish and suggested that maybe the absolute Torah prohibition of bona doesn't apply. You know, somewhat of a very detailed, lengthy argument response between the Chazon Ish and Rav Shlomo Zalman whether this point of bona is correct or not. But even according to those who disagreed with the Chazon Ish, even those who suggested that maybe in the absence of a light being turned on, maybe the Isser of bona doesn't apply, there are other prohibitions, there are other problems involved with using electricity. And one of the primary other prohibitions that is mentioned by the Gedolei HaPoskim is found in the third of the Maimonides. It's based actually on a Mishnah on Maseches Beitza, which the Gemara is commenting upon. The Mishnah here is talking about Yom Tov, it's not talking about Shabbos. And we know, of course, Shabbos and Yom Tov part ways in many areas of halacha. One of the most prominent ways is in terms of lighting fires. One is permitted to light a fire on Yom Tov. However, the Mishnah tells us one is not permitted to strike a match. The Mishnah doesn't actually speak about matches, but the Mishnah speaks about the old style of Boy Scouts rubbing two sticks, two stones together. The Mishnah says you're not allowed to start a fire from scratch. You're not allowed to begin a fire on Yom Tov. You have to take a fire from a pre-existing flame. What is the problem with starting a fire? If I want to cook, and I'm permitted to cook on Yom Tov, why can I not start the fire? So the Gemara gives a very cryptic answer. Mishum de kamolid bi Yom Tov. The Gemara says it has something to do with bringing something into existence on Yom Tov. If the flame wasn't here beforehand, so somehow that's problematic. Why exactly that should be so is a major dispute between the Rishonim, not for our purposes right now. Suffice it to say, most poskim assume that this Isser of Molid or Nolad, whatever you want to call it, is a prohibition midirabbanon. It means starting a fire from scratch, striking a match on Yom Tov, is not a Torah prohibition according to most, but it's still prohibited. It's still no question that it cannot be done. So there are some who wanted to suggest that any starting of any electric device automatically falls into the same category of molid / nolad, which would be outright prohibited both on Shabbos and Yom Tov, albeit perhaps not min haTorah. It would only be, only in a small O, would only be midirabbanan. So we already have in front of us three different possible categories of prohibitions which electricity may be involved in. One is, the most serious is, the issue of Havara, which according to all the Gedolei HaPoskim would be violated with actual lights. Then we're dealing with non-lights types of devices, which according to the Chazon Ish would also be prohibited min haTorah because of Boneh. And those who question that premise of the Chazon Ish would still concede that it's prohibited for other reasons. One of the prominent reasons that's suggested is the reason of Nolad. So again, this is in a certain sense academic. Namely, nobody, I hope no one's going to walk out of this year and say, what did Rabbi Savlosky just say? You can use electricity as long as it's not lights. No, Chalil v'chalil, nobody said that. And we just want to identify precisely what degree, what level of prohibition we're dealing with, and precisely what type of a prohibition we're dealing with. Is it min haTorah or is it min derabbanan? So some of you may be wondering, does it really make much of a difference? Is it min haTorah, min derabbanan? Baruch Hashem, we're all shomer Torah mitzvos here, so we observe the entire Shulchan Aruch. We observe what's min haTorah, we observe what's min derabbanan. The Torah itself requires of us to observe what we call the derabbanan. So nobody here should walk away thinking, well, it's only derabbanan, therefore it's okay. But nevertheless, it is important to know what is min haTorah and what is min derabbanan, because that distinction does play a role when certain shailas come up, as we're going to see. So one of the primary issues that come up, which are really a demarcation between what's prohibited min haTorah and what is only prohibited min derabbanan, doesn't involve a situation for a Jew to do the action, but it involves a question of asking a non-Jew to do something on one's behalf. Now, as a general rule, whatever I am not permitted to do on Shabbos and Yom Tov, I am not permitted to ask a non-Jew either. That is what's called Amira La'akum. Amira La'akum itself is only midirabbanan. Min haTorah, technically speaking, if I'm not doing the action, it would be permissible. But midirabbanan, for a variety of reasons, the Chachamim prohibited asking non-Jews to do things in our behalf. Nevertheless, sometimes you have a situation that arises where we have what's called a double derabbanan, which namely means I'm going to ask a non-Jew to do something that even if I would have done it myself, it would have only been midirabbanan. So it's a double derabbanan. It's derabbanan twice removed. So here the Shulchan Aruch tells us in the fourth of the Ma'amar Kamos, davar she'ena malacha, something which itself is not a malacha, that means it's not prohibited min haTorah, ve'eno asur lasos b'shabbos ela mishum shvus, it is only prohibited midirabbanan. Shvus is a code phrase for the word derabbanan in the realm of Shabbos and Yom Tov. So we're dealing with an action that even if I myself would do it, it would not be a Torah prohibition, it would only be a rabbinic prohibition. Mutar liYisrael lo malein Yehudi, it is permissible for a Jew to ask a non-Jew, lasoso b'Shabbos. You are permitted to ask a non-Jew to do something that itself is only midirabbanan, but not yet. V'hu sheyesha miktsas choli, provided there is some significant need, namely somebody is not well, o yitzach l'dava tzarech harbe, or there's some kind of a tremendous need, o mipnei mitzvah, or there's some kind of a mitzvah involved. So that's the basic heading that the Shulchan Aruch gives us, that whenever the issue arises where itself is only derabbanan, the action itself is only derabbanan, to ask a non-Jew to do is what we call a shvus to shvus. It's a double derabbanan. And if there's some very important pressing needs, or mitzvah, choli, etc., then it would be permissible. So the Shulchan Aruch just gives us one or two examples just to illustrate this principle. Ketzad, Oma Yisrael and Yehudi b'Shabbos lalos b'ilon l'havi shofar l'tkot kias mitzvah. Imagine, comes the first day of Rosh Hashanah and you realize the only shofar in town happens to be on top of a tree. And it happens to be that midirabbanan, you're not permitted to climb a tree on Shabbos. We're afraid if people climb trees, next thing you know, you're going to pull off some of the branches, some of the fruit. So midirabbanan, you're not allowed to climb a tree. So if the only shofar in town is on top of the tree, tough, you won't hear shofar that year. But if you can convince the next door neighbor, the non-Jewish neighbor, to climb the tree for you, so I guess you'd have to go a good explanation as to why you're doing that, but we've had a lot of those kinds of explanations over the years. You explain to the non-Jew that you need to get the shofar from the top of the tree, that's permissible. Because here it's a a classic example of a shvus de shvus de makom mitzvah, and a shvus de shvus de makom mitzvah we assume is permissible. So let's take it out of the question of climbing trees for show, for us a little bit more practical, down to earth. What would this mean for us in terms of our questions of electricity? What would that halacha be if I want to ask a non-Jew to turn on a light for me? So here we have a problem, because we said before that turning on lights we're assuming is a malacha d'oraisa, and that's tantamount to asking a non-Jew to do a d'oraisa for you, which is basically prohibited. There are certain very, very extreme circumstances where even doing d'oraisas are permissible by asking a non-Jew, but they are few and far between. Just one strange application where even to ask a non-Jew to do a d'oraisa would in fact be permissible, which is explicit in the Gemara. The Gemara tells us that it's so important that land in Eretz Yisrael should belong to the Jewish people that Chazal gave us a special dispensation that if it comes to a scenario where there's a non-Jew willing to sell some land in the land of Israel and the Jew has to buy it, that if you don't buy it on Shabbos, well then it's going to go to another non-Jew. So you can actually have a non-Jew come along with you and help you out and sign the documents in your behalf. You can't do it yourself. That would be malacha min haTorah. You can actually ask the non-Jew directly to sign the documents, thereby to purchase the land on behalf of the Jew. Mishum Yishev Eretz Yisrael, they lifted the entire prohibition of Amir Yaakov. Lest one think that this was purely theoretical. This actually happened. Lamaisa goes back to the days before 1948. When the British were in control of Eretz Yisrael, and they used to periodically have land auctions, and auctions were open for everybody, Jew and non-Jew alike. And some people in the British government will leave out all the political differences, but they decided that let's do it in a way that the Jews aren't going to have a chance to get this particular piece of land. So they didn't do too much. They scheduled the auction for Yom Kippur. They figured it's pretty unlikely any Jews could actually come and buy the land. Well, the wind of that story got to Rav Kook at the time, and he instructed one of his Tamidim to hire a non-Jewish cab driver to drive him on Yom Kippur. What else is saying on the side of Tokum? He's going negotiating a piece of land. They sent him to go drive with a non-Jewish driver and have the non-Jew sign all the appropriate documents on behalf of the Jewish community to purchase that piece of land, quoting this Gemara Maseches Gittin that says that Yishev Eretz Yisrael is so important that Chazal actually tell you you can violate what would otherwise be a violation of Amir Yaakov. But again, those are the few and far in between the shadows. Back for us, back in Chicago and back in Teaneck. So we very rarely will permit Amir Yaakov for something which is min haTorah, but something which is min derabbanon, if there's some kind of a big makom mitzvah, that would be permissible. So again, to ask the non-Jew to turn on lights, that's going to be a problem. But what about to ask the non-Jew to do other kind of electric devices? Now it's going to depend. So if you hold that other electricity is d'oraisa, like the Chazanish said, like others suggested, that's going to be a problem. But if you're willing to take the approach that other electricity in the absence of lights may only be midirabbanon, so then one can begin to negotiate, not you to do it yourself, obviously, but to perhaps ask a non-Jew to do it if there's some great makom mitzvah, some great tzorich. So we didn't quite have the scenario of buying land on Yom Kippur, but we have had other scenarios in Yom Kippur. We had two different situations that played out in our shul on two different Yom Kippurs. There was one year on Yom Kippur where a couple of days before there was a blackout which threw our Shabbos clock system out of whack a little bit, and of course nobody realized it. The first day that we realized it was Yom Kippur morning, we came to Shacharis wondering why the lights weren't on. So I went downstairs to see, because according to the Shabbos clock, it was still 5:15 in the morning, whereas davening was starting at 7:15. So we had a little problem. So quick calculation, came to the realization that we're going to make it through most of Shacharis without lights. So the question was, well, Baruch Hashem, it was a sunny day, so the windows were open. But the question became, can we ask a non-Jew to turn on the lights? And I thought not. I thought that to ask the non-Jew to turn on the lights, as we said before, is a malacha d'oraisa. It's a Amir Yaakov on a malacha d'oraisa that wasn't such an unbelievable tzorech, so I don't think that one would have a right to do it. However, another Yom Kippur, we had a similar shayla, it wasn't a question of the lights, it was a question of the air conditioning. That the air conditioning was on very, very high, and I saw some guys in the back. It was strange. I remember that Yom Kippur, it was so cold in the shul that after the Neilah was over, I saw guys taking off the kittos. Guys were pulling off sweatshirts. The guy had a parker underneath. Guy took off his gloves. But one year we decided we better get our act together and try to get the air conditioning working properly. So it actually was pretty cold in the shul. So I permitted to have a non-Jew be brought in to lower the air conditioning. And here the rationale was really a double rationale. Number one, assuming, according to those who are lenient, that turning on or off the air conditioning would only be a derabbanon. Rabbanan. So here we're talking about a shvus, the shvus of the Rabbanan on a Rabbanan, a macha mitzvah, people you have to daven properly. That was one factor. The other factor was the poskim say, if it's very cold in a room, people are concerned they may catch cold. Whether that's correct medically or not is another discussion, but at least our grandmothers told us that you catch cold when it's cold in shul. So therefore, that would be another leniency perhaps to permit having a non-Jew come in. So it was a little bit of a strange situation. I don't remember what davening we were up to, but in the middle of davening, all of a sudden the non-Jewish patsied up to the front and started pashkin around with the thermostat. So I had to explain myself a little bit afterwards why I thought that was mutter, but at least it made for a good shiur at some point. It makes some good stories as the years go on. So anyway, getting back to our story. So the bottom line is, it is important for us to know what's deraisa and what's derabbanan, not even as it relates so much to we doing things, but as it relates to asking a non-Jew to do it. We move on now to the fifth of the Mamakomos, where rather than focusing on the lights and electricity, the Gemara raises a question which really permeates all of Hilchos Shabbos and all of Hilchos Yom Tov, and it's going to become critical for us in terms of some of our modern-day questions, and that's the following. The Gemara in Masechta Shabbos quotes a statement of Rabbi Shimon, the sign of Rabbi Shimon Omer, Gora Adam Mita Kisei V'Savsel U'Bavad Shlei Iskaven Lasos Charitz. A person is permitted on Shabbos to drag a chair over ground, over soil, even though there's a chance that by doing so you may make a hole in the ground. And making a hole in the ground is a problem in Hilchos Shabbos, related to one or two different possible melachos. If a person would be intending to make holes in the ground, that would be a serious problem on Shabbos. Here, this is not my intention. I want to drag a chair. There's a chance, 50-50 chance, it may make a hole. That's what's called a dover she'eino miskaven. Rabbi Shimon tells us that it's permissible. On Shabbos, one is permitted to do action X, even though there's a 50-50 chance action Y may happen. I'm not particularly planning on doing action Y. My intent is to do X, which is itself intrinsically permissible. Dovash and Miskaven, Rabbi Shimon says, is permissible. And the Gemara actually paskins like this statement, and we assume this way, lahalocha, that one is permitted to do actions on Shabbos and Yom Tov, even though there is a chance that unintentionally a malocha may result. As long as that is not my intention, Dovash and Miskaven is permissible. However, comes the Gemara in the sixth of the Mamakamos and puts important condition on this otherwise tremendous leniency of Rabbi Shimon. On the sixth of the Mamakamos in Shabbos Kuf Gimel, Vabai v'Rava Dami Trevayu, Modi Rabbi Shimon v'psikurei shevelo yomus. When did Rabbi Shimon say that you're allowed to do action X even though there's a chance that Y may take place? That's if there's a chance that Y may take place. But if you know for a fact that Y will take place, that is outright prohibited. And the Gemara uses a very strange illustration for this, what's called psik reishe velo yamos. According to the way we usually assume, what psik reishe velo yamos means is as follows. A person decides that he wants, as a little toy for his child, I guess it's a pre-Toys R Us days, he wants a toy for his child on Shabbos, the head of a chicken. So he says, no problem, I'm going to cut the head off a chicken and give it to my child to play with. What's wrong with cutting a head off a chicken? Well, nothing except for the fact that the chicken may die. The Gemara says the chicken may not die, the chicken will die. You can't hide behind Dover Shein Miskavin. You can't say, well, I didn't want to kill the chicken. All I wanted to do was get a toy for my kid. So the Gemara says, that's ridiculous. That's psikureishe v'lo yamos. You cut the head of the chicken off and the chicken's not going to die? Of course it's going to die. That's not a Dover Shein Miskavin. So here an important condition to Rabbi Shimon's statement that when do we say Dover Shein Miskavin is permissible? That's if there's a chance a malacha may result. But if it's certain that a malacha may result, or close to certain the post can add on, that's considered to be problematic in Shabbos. Nevertheless, there is a question that the Gemara says that even assuming that that's true, that psikresha is a problem, the Gemara continues back to the sixth of the Marmakamos, that when do we say something is a psikresha, when do we say that it's outright prohibited because I know it's going to happen? That's in a scenario where not only do I know it's going to happen, but I'm pretty happy, I'm satisfied with the result that's happening. So for example, the Gemara gives a similar example. We're gonna put it a little bit closer to home in terms of things that we could relate to. The Gemara discusses, the Rishonim discuss a question as follows. A person wants to wash the Tilas Yadayim, and he happens to be sitting out in a sukkah by the grass. He wants to wash the Tilas Yadayim over the grass. Now, washing the Tilas Yadayim on Shabbos and Yom Tov is not a malacha, but watering grass is a malacha. So what would you say about such a shaila? I want to wash my hands. I'm not really planning on watering the grass. I'm interested in washing my hands. Is that a dover shein miskaven? Says the Gemara, that's not a dover shein miskaven. That's a psigresha. I know for a fact the grass is going to grow. But here the Gemara says there's a difference. What if it's not my grass? So I don't really care whether the grass is going to grow. That's what's called the psikresha delo nichale. It means it's a psikresha that I don't really care about. Now the word lo nichale is a little bit misleading, but lo nichale means I really don't want it. Most of the Rishonim say all it means is I don't really care one way or the other. A psikresha delo nichale is not the same as a psikresha de nichale. If it's my own grass, that's an outright prohibition, because I'm very happy. I'm going to wash the sedaim, save a few dollars in the gardener this week. But if it's somebody else's grass, who I don't particularly care about, that's called the psikresha delo nichale. So it's absolutely clear from the Gemara that there is a difference between those two statements, but what is unclear is just how different are they. What is the status of a psikresha delo nichale? I'm doing action X. I know that action Y is going to result, but I don't particularly care about action Y. What is the status of such an action? So here the Shulchan Aruch quotes us somewhat of a complicated scenario on the 7th of the Marmakomos. We're going to leave out all the details of this right now. It's getting a little bit late. But if you take a look at yourselves in the 7th of the Marmakomos, the Shulchan Aruch discusses a scenario of a person. He's trying to take something out of a barrel, a rag out of a barrel, and by doing so he's going to squeeze out some of the wine. He doesn't really care about it. Is it a malacha, not a malacha? The bottom line is the Shulchan Aruch quotes that although there are some who suggested that it's actually permissible to do a psikresha delo nichale, most of the Rishonim are of the opinion a psikresha delo nichale is prohibited, albeit midirabbanan. It's not as bad as a psikresha de nichale. Practically speaking, washing the tilsidayim in your own backyard is prohibited min haTorah. Washing the tilsidayim in somebody else's backyard is prohibited midirabbanan. We move on now to the last of the Makomos, my Makomos, then we'll hopefully get a chance to try to put all this together into some real practical shilas. The 8th of the Marmakomos, the Shulchan Aruch is quoting from a sugya that appears in Masechet Shabbos, a person doing a malacha on Shabbos, but he's not doing the malacha directly. He's doing it through what we call grama. He's doing an indirect action. So the example that the Shulchan Aruch quotes from the Mishnah, Teva She'achas Ba'or, if there's a box that caught on fire, you can put something over the other edge of the box which will prevent the fire from spreading, and that's permissible. And similarly, if you want to block a fire from spreading, so you can take barrels and put them in front of the flames, even if they're barrels that are clearly going to break apart because of the fire, and the water in the barrels is going to put the fire out. Putting out a fire, derech grama, in an indirect way, is permissible. Now, just a point quickly before we move on in terms of this discussion, the poskim tell us that although the Gemara does speak about not extinguishing a fire directly on Shabbos, this does not apply today for one very simple reason. The Gemara was talking about a situation where a person lived in a house far away from any other houses, was out in the middle of middle of nowhere, and there's no danger of life. Everybody's out of the house. It's a question of loss of property. Loss of property is not necessarily permit one to do things that are prohibited on Shabbos. So here the Gemara has a whole sugya about. There's not even a chance of anybody getting hurt or anybody getting killed, chalila. It's just a question of loss of property. One cannot extinguish the fire directly. One would have to do it through grama. Today, the way our houses are built, especially in apartments and even houses are close to one another, and therefore, under no circumstances should one start playing games and putting out fires with a grama. If there's a fire in the house, if you can put it out yourself, you put it out. If not, you call the fire department immediately and just do whatever you would do on a regular Tuesday. So this is a consensus of all the poskim today that none of this actually practically applies the way our living quarters are set up. But again, let's put ourselves back in the mindset of Chazal for a moment, where one should not be putting out the flame directly, but indirectly is permissible, derech grama. So the Gemara seems to say, the Shulchan Aruch seems to say, that grama is okay. Whatever is done indirectly is okay. The Rama adds two words, hagah, and the end of the 8th Marmakamos, v'machom seida. Yeah, because your house is going to burn down. That's why it's mutter. But just to say that things are permissible because they're grama, because it's indirect, there's no such thing, says the Rama. Just to do things there, grama, not acceptable. Grama in very, very unique circumstances of cholev, hefset, things of that nature, then you can begin to negotiate, to discuss what can be done and what cannot be done indirectly. So really, just to recap from the lumdus point of view, from the Makoros point of view, we really have several sugyas that we ran through in really a short amount of time. We went through the basic premises of the Gedolei HaPoskim, what malachas are involved, both the Arais and the Rabbanan, in terms of electricity. We spoke about the possibility of Havara. We spoke about the possibility of Bonev, building. We spoke about the possibility of Molid, bringing new things into existence. Then we moved on to discuss what is the status in halacha when I do action X, which may or may not bring about action Y. A davar she'eino miskaven is permissible, but a psik reisha is prohibited. But a psik reisha delo nichalei is either permissible or prohibited midirabanan. And the third main topic that we spoke about was the issue of grama, how grama is not a Torah prohibition, but, well, at least according to the psak of the Ramah, is generally prohibited midirabanan unless there's some very special extenuating circumstances. So now we have a little bit of a background. Let's try to see how much we can apply to some very practical shailas that come up. So we'll start with the beginning. The first shaila, issue of refrigerators. Now, refrigerators is already an old shaila. I'm not talking about fancy digital print. I'm talking about the good old, I don't know, good or bad, whatever you want to call it, the old style refrigerators where you open up a door and it doesn't look like anything's happening, but lo and behold, very often, you hear, wait a second, I just opened up the door, so I caused warm air to go in, and all of a sudden the motor starts. Is that a problem on Shabbos? Is that not a problem on Shabbos? So here, this was a major debate with the Gedolei HaPoskim already quite some time ago, and many of the Poskim who permitted this, probably most of us follow this view, that refrigerator, the opening of a refrigerator per se is permissible on Shabbos. We're working with the following premise. Even though we are, in a sense, possibly causing something electric to change, which we saw, according to the Chazon Ish, is a very serious problem. Even according to others, is a less serious problem, but it's still problematic. But this perhaps falls under the category of what's called a davar she'eino miskaven. I'm not really planning on this happening, and I don't really know what's going to happen. I don't know for a fact that's going to happen. It's quite possible that if I open up the refrigerator, I don't leave it open for a tremendous amount of time, so the motor may not go on, depending on what the thermostat, depending on the cold and warm airflow is. So there's a chance it may be yes and maybe no. Since this perhaps falls under the category of a davar she'eino miskaven, we have a right to be lenient. This was the view that many of us follow to permit the opening of refrigerators on Shabbos. However, what sometimes makes refrigerator opening more complicated is what if I open up the refrigerator and the light is going to go on? So that's no longer a davar she'eino miskaven. That already falls into the category of what we call a psik reisha. I know for a fact, if I didn't turn off the light, I know for a fact that the light is going to go on. One could argue that is the most serious form of psik reisha. It's a psik reisha d'nichalei, because I'm happy that there's a light there. Why is the light there? Because it makes it easier for me to see things in the refrigerator. So I'm happy. Now, a person can't hide behind Shabbos and say, oh, I'm not happy because it's Shabbos, I don't want to go. That's like a circular reasoning. It means it's a psik reisha d'nichalei during the week, so that makes it problematic on Shabbos. To make matters even worse, this is not just an electric device. This is a light. And as we saw at the beginning of this year, lights are the most serious problem. So under no circumstances should one open up a refrigerator if one knows that the light is going to turn on. What does one do if one realizes they forgot to turn off the light? All of a sudden they come home from shul Friday night and goes, uh-oh, we forgot to turn off the light. Baruch Hashem, in my house that doesn't happen, because when we bought the new refrigerator, we take the light and we toss it, so that way we never have to worry about it. But in the old days, when I was a little kid, I remember my mother would always, last minute, right before Shabbos, right before Lech Benjamin, was the turning off the light, and every once in a while, we'd forget. So what do you do? So here the post can raise the question, can we ask a non-Jew to open up the refrigerator for us? So at first glance, that sounds problematic, because I'm asking a non-Jew to turn on a light. We said before, that's a no-no on Shabbos. Well, here it's different. Why? If you think about it, I'm not asking the non-Jew to turn on a light. I'm asking the non-Jew to open the door. Now, there's a psik reisha, going back to what we spoke about before, there's a psik reisha that the light is going to go on, but I'm not asking the non-Jew to turn on the light. So we usually assume that amira la'akom, asking a non-Jew, doesn't apply to psik reisha. For the simple reason, that's not what I'm asking him to do. I'm asking him to do X. Now, it's true that X will lead to Y, but I'm not asking him to do Y, and therefore it would be permissible. Unless one wants to argue, as Shlomo Zalman suggests, that maybe we have to view the opening of the refrigerator door and the turning on the light as one action. Maybe we cannot view it as two separate actions. Maybe since the normal way of turning on the light is by opening the door, that's like flicking the switch. That's the way you turn a light. That's how you strike a match. You open up a lighted refrigerator by opening the door. If that's the case, so then it would be not only prohibited for me to open up the door, it would be prohibited for me to ask the non-Jew as well. So Rabbi Moshe Feinstein didn't agree with that last point. Rabbi Moshe Feinstein was of the opinion, nope, salam d'shemachlekes. In the Lower East Side, they looked at refrigerators like this, that you're opening up the refrigerator door. A light? That's going on by itself. That's happening by itself. It's a psikaration. That's all right. And in Shari Chesed, Shlomo Zalman lived. Yes, they had a different view, a different world view on refrigerators. Well, the lights and doors, all the same thing. So I'll tell you a story, fascinating story. It didn't involve refrigerators. It involved a car door. It happened back in Yeshiva. This goes back. I can only date the story because it happened before I got married. So it's over 20 years ago. I was learning. It was a late Friday night in Yeshiva. And somebody walked into the Beis Medrash, and he told us that he had left his keys in the car or something. I read the details of the story now. He wanted to ask one of the YU security guards to open up the car door in order to get out the keys because someone's going to steal the car. So I thought at the time that should be permissible. I said that's considered to be a classic example of an amir al-apam on ipsig ratio, because the most serious violation of opening up a car door is the fact that the light's going to go on. First thing I asked him was, how yeshiva shoes your car? Do you really have a car light or not? He said, yeah, he had a car. Okay, good. So I always tell that story. I don't know if I tell it publicly. I'll tell it publicly. I always... when I picked up my wife on our very first date, so it was the end of June, and it was very, very hot. I picked her up, my air conditioning in my car was one of those cars that didn't have the car lights. So it didn't have, the air conditioning wasn't working so well either. So I see she gets into the car, I see within 30 seconds, I see she's already sweating. The first words out of my mouth were, I'm sorry. For the first thing I ever said, I said, I'm sorry that the air conditioning's not working. So she said to me, don't worry, I'm from California, we're used to heat. And I realized that was, yeah, they're also used to good air conditioning in California, but Baruch Hashem, all's well, that ends well. Since then we've gotten a car that works, the air conditioning works, okay. Anyway, getting back to the story. So I thought that it should be permissible to ask the non-Jew to do it, because it's basically an amir al-apam on a psik ratio. So one of the other brachim in the Shiva said to me at the time, he showed me this footnote of Rav Shlomo Zalman, the footnote quoted in Shmir Shabbos Yochasa, that Rav Shlomo Zalman thought that a refrigerator door and a refrigerator light are really one and the same. You can't differentiate between them. So he thought, according to that svara, the same should be true with the car door and the car light. So it was more chumr, it was more serious than a psik ratio of amir al-apam. It was amir al-apam on a malacha derais and mamish. So I told him that I thought that Rav Moshe held that it was mutter. We were pilpling back and forth. We were fighting out in the Y based medrash, the machlokes, the gedolei haposkim. By the time we finally came to realization, conclusion, what we should do, the shaila was a moot shaila. The card had already been broken into. They had already taken it. It wasn't worth that much anyway. But it was all done. I guess the god of health, like Rav Shlomo Zalman, you can help that. Another application of a lot of the shilas with the electricity and the Doshim Skavens, everything starts to merge together, is a very common shila in terms of walking past different sensors and different, whether sensors in terms of lights and sensors in terms of cameras on Shabbos and Yom Tov. What is the status of all these things? So one could, once again, apply some of the principles that we've been discussing. And one of the important principles may be Dover Sheinu Miskaven, but it's not quite Dover Sheinu Miskaven, because it's more correctly a psik ratio. I'm walking past the light, and the light's going to go on. Now, even though my primary intention was to turn the light on, but I know it's going to go on. I walk past this light every other night of the week. I know walking down this street turns on such and such light. In my own house, turns on the light. So what's that locham? So it's very hard to defend that based on Dover Sheinu Miskaven. That becomes a psik ratio. Now, depending on where the light is, depending on how much other light there is, or depending on how much you really care about these motion detectors, it may fall into the category of a psik ratio de lo nichale. You may not really care about it. I'm walking past the camera. It's taking a picture of me. Asma, so what? I'm not really interested in that. So that's a psik ratio de lo nichale. But remember we said psik ratio de lo nichale may still be usher. The Shulchan Aruch quotes that most of the Rishonim wrote the opinion that a psik ratio de lo nichale is still problematic. However, there are some Rishonim who say if it's a psik ratio de lo nichale on a derabbanon, that's a little bit more lenient. But this may get us back into our original question. Well, is it deraisa? Is it derabbanon? Is it light? Is the light a deraisa? Is the camera a derabbanon? Comes very, very complicated. How to answer these shadows. A lot of these issues start to merge together. So basically, what I think our practice in these types of shadows should be as follows. Lichat chila, if you have your own sensors in your own house, and own cameras in your own house, don't tell the Ganovim this, but I think it's preferable. All else, I think it's preferable they should all be turned off before Shabbos and Yom Tov, to avoid any of these kinds of shilas. for whatever reason, if that didn't happen, or for whatever reason you're visiting someone else's house who apparently didn't hear this particular shiur, and you realize right away that you're walking past these sensors. So I think that if there's a real need, it's hard to tell a person not to walk past somebody else's house all the time on Shabbos. I think one can be lenient that many of these shailas are psikreishad lo nicheles, and many of them are psikreishad lo nicheles under rabbanans, and some of them may involve issues of grama as well, depending on how one precisely defines grama. They may be, some of these devices may be halachically considered to be indirect. So I think there are a few different points together that could combine, that one could be a little bit more lenient about this. Again, lechatchila, those who are able to, if it's not considered to be a danger, one who is able to avoid any of these kinds of shiles and shabbos and yom, if it's preferable to do so. One who finds himself stuck and has to walk past these sensors, particularly ones that one really couldn't care less about in somebody else's house, so then I think one would have a certain degree a right to be makel on many of these kinds of shilas. A third issue that comes up, also a lot of these principles begin to play out, of Shirim Skaveins and Psikratias, and are we dealing with their ice, are we dealing with their abundance, becomes issues relating to use of ovens on Shabbos and relating to use of ovens on Yontif as well. So obviously to turn on an oven on Yontif, on Shabbos, or to turn higher an oven on Shabbos is a clear-cut violation of Lo Sevar Eish B'chomosh Masechem Yom HaShabbos, so we're not discussing that. But we're discussing use of an oven, if the oven is on already, using an oven in such a way where there's a chance, a possibility, a good chance, a probability, a definite chance of the oven adjusting itself because one has a thermostat on the oven. So what is the din if a person left an oven on from before Shabbos and one wants to open up the door of the oven? Is that considered to be permissible or not? Or should we argue that maybe, or possibly or probably, my opening up of the door is going to put the oven to go back on again, and that would be a serious problem on Shabbos? So we had a similar shaila we just spoke about a moment ago about refrigerators. And refrigerators, we seem to be a little bit more lenient about refrigerators. Question is, are the two really comparable? So going back to what we spoke about before, depending on what one's take is about electricity, one could perhaps differentiate between the two. In the case of the refrigerator, where it wasn't a question of the light going on, the light was already taken out, not a question of the light going on, it was more of a question of the motor going on. So that type of an electric device may be, according to some Gedolei HaPoskim, only midrabbanan, which of course gives us a little bit more of a leeway, a little bit more right to be lenient. When it comes to ovens going on, or ovens, a gas, a flame going on, that's a much more serious shaila, which would be a deraisa dika shaila, and maybe we'd have to take that with a from a much more strict point of view. There are differences of opinion among the Gedolei HaPoskim today, whether we can permit opening up ovens on Shabbos with that very real possibility that the oven may actually be going on because they're opening up. There are some who permit it outright. There are some who say, well, it's a Dovah Shein Riskaven, I don't really know what's going to happen, and therefore we can be Makel and Shem. And there are others who are not so convinced that that those facts are always right. Sometimes it falls into the category of a Psik Resha, and it may even fall into the category of a Psik Resha, the Nichalei. Here, it may also make a difference. Am I planning on continuing to use that oven Friday night? Am I planning on putting the food back in the oven? Am I leaving some of the food in the oven? Then I want the oven to get hotter. That's a psikration, the nichalei. If I'm taking all the food out now and I'm not really interested in using that oven anymore, then it may revert down to a psikration, the lo nichalei, which would be a little bit more lenient. So the oven issue is a little bit of a tricky issue. Lechatchila, those who do not have to get involved in leaving ovens on and taking stuff out of the oven, those who for whatever reason are leaving ovens on from before Shabbos and taking food out on Shabbos, should be aware of the fact that there are some poskim who have problems with it, and there are some poskim who permit it based on the fact that it could, we could also fall back to some degree on Dovah Shein Miskaven. The use of ovens on Shabbos is significantly more difficult than the use of ovens on Yom Tov for the following reason. Use of ovens on Yom Tov, throw back to what we said before, one is permitted to light a fire on Yom Tov, provided that it's from a pre-existing flame. What is the status of, let's say, turning on an oven or turning on a stove, something like that, on Yom Tov? So here, there is a difference between the old-style ovens and stoves and the new-style ovens and stoves. Those stoves or ovens which had pilot lights to them, the ones where I grew up, so you can turn that on Yom Tov. Because if I want to cook on Yom Tov, if the flame is there already, I'm just adding a little bit more gas to the flame, that's perfectly okay. However, today we're pretty sure that all of the stoves, all the ovens work with a igniter today, which is electric. So that becomes a problem. That becomes an issue of what we said before: emotzinas ha'esh bnei etzim and avonim. You're not permitted to rub two sticks together, or to strike a match, or to turn on the electric igniter to start the flame. For that matter, we assume the halacha that all the use of electricity on Yom Tif is the same as Shabbos. Although there was one opinion, there were some poskim in Europe who thought that the way electric lights work is that the flame is really there ready, the heat is really there ready, and you're just extending the flame. That generally has not been accepted today. There was such a view, and there were very chashuv people in Europe, came to America, who did have the practice of turning on light bulbs on Yom Tif. It's true. I remember it as a child also. There were many people, Anashim Chashuvim, who did it. I think that the overwhelming majority of the postgame today is that that should not be practiced, that we assume that the turning on of electricity today is considered to be the equivalent of starting the flame from scratch. So getting back to the ovens on Yom Tif, to turn on the oven on Yom Tif should be a problem. However, if the oven is already on, or the stove is already on, and now it's just a question of raising the gas, that presumably should be okay. There's nothing wrong with that. That's like just putting more wood into the fire, which is perfectly permissible for the purpose of cooking on Yom Tif. The problem with a lot of our ovens today is that there are other issues that are involved. There are, anytime you raise the temperature, that causes digital changes, that causes changes in the computer of the oven, which those may become problematic. So the flame itself is the least of the problems in the oven. It's the other things, the other electric changes that may take, which may pose a problem. I'm well aware of the fact that there are certain ovens that have hashgachas on them, so to speak, that have Yom Tif modes and Shabbos modes and different gedolei poskim who are suggesting that if you override some of these systems, that would be permissible. Many, many poskim disagree with that. There are many poskim who held that even with all the overrides and everything, there are still certain things that are going on inside the oven that may still be problematic on Yom Tif. So again, it's hard for me to say. I'm not a rav in the community here. I don't want to come down hard. I don't know what the policy here is. But there are different opinions about a lot of these overrides on Yom Tif, whether they're permissible or not. Just to conclude this part, we'll take a few minutes of questions afterwards. But a couple of years ago on Shavuos, so in one of the particular ovens that had received the Hashgacha from a certain organization that was becoming popular in town, so many of the Rabbanim in Tinek came out with kind of unofficial statements recommending that people not use that particular oven because we felt that there were some shadows that may still be present even with all the overrides and everything. So in my shul also, right before Shavuos, I announced that I don't think that one should be using that particular oven on Yom Tov. Go figure, my luck, that on Shavuos we had a gas leak in our oven that was on, and we had to have somebody called the PSNG as the gas company in northern New Jersey, so we had to have one of the non-Jewish neighbors quickly call, if you can't get a non-Jewish, you can call yourself, I mean, it's Peshav Pekuch Nefesh, whatever, you have a next door neighbor who called the gas company, the gas man came. So it happens to be that even though we have an oven which has one of those overrides, we don't adjust it on Yom Tif, but we do use the quote-unquote Shabbos mode for another reason, because if you don't have the Shabbos mode, on many of the ovens, there's an automatic shut-off after 12 hours. So Yom Tif generally is more than 12 hours. So if you want to actually have that the oven to work, even if you don't like, for halachic reasons, the override, you may want to use it anyway for practical reasons. So we had our oven in the Shabbos mode, or Shabbos Yom Tif mode, whatever you want to call it. So now we have this big tough PSNG fella comes, and he sticks his head into the oven, and he's trying to figure out what's going on. So he says, what's going on with the setting? I said, oh, yeah, it's in the Sabbath mode. He said, how do I turn this thing off? I said, well, there's the book, there's the manual. So the guy's sitting and reading it for 20 minutes. He says, I've been in the business for 40 years. I've never seen anything as ridiculous as this. So I don't want to say to him, you know, I would suggest if you go to every single oven down this block, you will notice everybody has these things, so maybe you should catch up a little bit on the high tech. He was still in the tech of the 1950s. But I said afterwards, that particular Shabbos mode, Yom Tov mode, got its revenge on me, because I asked it before Yom Tov, so I got in the Kamim and a Shemai, and they took it out of my own oven. Anyway, so a couple of problems we can already see here, just from a little bit the Rashi Prakam, just some of the highlights of the sugya. The principles go all the way back to Har Sinai. The principles of Davar Shin Miskaven and Psik Reishas and Gurumas and what's their Isa, what's their Rabbanan. The Aleph Beis of the Sugya goes back to the Torah Shebaal Peh, goes back to the Yesodos of how to observe Shabbos and Yom Tov properly. Then it becomes a job of Gedolei Poskim in each and every generation to try to figure out how to extrapolate, how to apply properly those principles as the technology develops and goes from generation to generation. Hopefully, Kadosh Baruch Hu should give us that ability to understand it, to appreciate the wonderful, beautiful Masara that we have, to be able to apply the principles of old to the situations and technology of new. Here's the take this couple questions.
Play whatever you want.
Okay.
You've asked the guy to turn on, to open the refrigerator door because the light is on. Could you hint to him that you really don't need the light so he can turn off the light?
Okay, so the correct thing to do at that point, with assuming that you want to use the refrigerator more than once, that Shabbos, is to hint him in a way that's permissible. Hinting to a non-Jew is always tricky. What you have to hint is the following way. You cannot give a direct hint. You can't say, gee, that light's on, please do something about it. You can't say that. You can comment, the light is on. You know, he'll probably say, okay, like we do better, just say the light is on, and we don't like lights on. You cannot say that, well, you know, it's my Sabbath tonight, I can't fix it. You can't talk about the malach itself. So it has to be what's called a remesh, a lo b'derech tzivoy, without a direct command, and without any mentioning of the malach. Unfortunately, what I sometimes find is that the other 6 days of the week, when usually the person who is usually called into these kinds of things, usually the babysitter to somebody, sometimes I'm not as fluent in other languages, so sometimes the conversation is usually also a remes at that point. So I'm never quite sure I understand the conversation. Shabbos kavachomer, so it's a remes. You try your best to give a remes, shalom aderech tzivu, without mentioning malach, and then that would probably be the best way to go.
Follow up, what happens if there's no guy, you turned it on, you opened the door, and you didn't realize, what do you do?
That's a big problem. That's a very serious problem. Try to get your food out of there. It's a big problem.
A situation close to what you mentioned about with the photoelectric detector for light is you could go to a hotel and you find that the hotel has either a photoelectric detector or a pressure floor that opens the door. Are you stuck in the hotel on Shabbos?
I mean, regular walking through the... You walk on it, it does open.
It opens the door.
Yeah, so one would have to wait for somebody else to walk through. When a non-Jew walks through, then you can... we have in the hospitals all the time, you have to wait for somebody to come through and you walk and you follow them. I thought you were asking about the hotel doors. That was what I was expecting. I heard the word hotel. About the doors, the electronic locks. Yeah.
The individual doors.
Yeah. A lot of problems, yeah. It's good. Ashri Yoshri Visech, we say, stay home on Shabbos, it's good.
How does the halacha view, at least theorizing,
right? Okay, so the fluorescent lights, although there were some who wanted to argue that maybe the fluorescent lights would only be the Rabbanon because there's no incandescent bulb, the problem is that the starter in the fluorescent bulbs is problematic, and the wires that glow, we usually assume today that the fluorescent bulbs are also a deraisa. So any possible coolers that may have been suggested. At one time, I used to have that old, you know, that mindset that fluorescent was on a drabana and some of those coolers of Miriam Yaakov, etc. So a couple of years ago, I took a group of Bachram from Yeshiva to Eretz Yisrael for a Shabbos mission. So what it meant was that we learned sugyas in Ilcha Shabbos for half the day during a winter break. We learned for about 4 or 5 hours every day these kinds of sugyas, electricity, sugyas related to modern day shailas. And then we went each day on a different trip to see how these things play out in Eretz Yisrael today. So one day we went to Shaare Tzedek Hospital to see what they do in terms of a lot of these things. One day we went to Tzomet Institute to see how, you know, technology. We spent one day in an army base seeing how they use different issues come up. So we made the Halach L'maisa trip out of it. So when we were in the Tzomet Institute, so one of the individuals who was speaking to us at the Institute for Technology in Halacha in Israel, so he was talking about the fluorescent bulbs, and he was the one who alerted me to this idea that the fluorescent bulbs are most probably deraisa. Then he said to me, he said, but not all fluorescents are like that. Some fluorescents may not have some of those concerns. So I said to him, how would I know which is which? So he looked at me and says, oh, you would never be able to tell. He said, but I know. That doesn't help me much. So I don't know. I'm not sure what he meant. It was Sisrei Torah. But we assume that, but what you said, the other lights, it's like little, very often on a lot of the sensors, so those lights which don't have anything on them, those are probably only derabbanan. And I mean, those would be a little bit more lenient.
A few years ago, here in Chicago, we had an incident where on a Friday, those of us who've been here, on a particular Friday night in January, several Jewish institutions were very badly vandalized. And a couple of them have security cameras. And it was only thanks to those cameras that the perpetrators were actually caught. And so my question is, we have these cameras that are attached to, you know, one was a Masifta and, you know, Orthodox synagogues, but it was as a result, they're for security purposes, and as a result of these working on Shabbat, that the perpetrators were caught.
Right.
So that's Shemamash Shenechalo.
Well, not really. Depends on precisely how you Well, you want those cameras working for the perpetrator, but you don't really care whether they're videoing you coming out of shul. So when you're walking past any malacha that's being done is, if you assume that that's my malacha, if I'm walking past the camera that's taking a picture of me, if you assume that that's my malacha, which is also questionable, but if you assume that that's my malacha because I'm being videoed, but I don't really care to be videoed. I don't want to be videoed on Shabbos. I want the camera to take care of the guy who's breaking into the shul, but I don't want it to take care of me. So one could argue that's also called the psikreshul anichleis. That's why I was very hesitant to say before that I'm not telling everyone to turn off all the cameras. I'm saying each case by case and each community and each rav has to decide, you know, what's appropriate, what's not appropriate. If there's a real fear, so then the rav has to take that into consideration.
Well, we have to assume nowadays that any time we walk around in public, we're being videoed everywhere we go.
Right. But again, most of the. I mean, whatever we can't control. So we have to assume that that's a psikreshul anichleis, that even though you're right, we may be happy about the cameras, but I don't really care about me being video.
There's a company in Southern Illinois making low-tech gas ovens with continuous pilot.
That's good.
And you can buy them.
They would help. They would help for Bishalakom. They would help for Yontif. I think we should go Chadish and Menachem Kedem. We'll go back to the old and the Elsa. We just bought a new fridge a couple of months ago, so my wife asked me, what should we look for? I said, just do me one favor. Go into the store and ask for the least complicated refrigerator.
Exactly.
I said those are the best chances of less shyless.
I have to apologize for just cutting you off and ending. Thank you, Rabbi Sabalevsky. Thank you, everyone, for coming. Just a reminder, this evening, everyone is invited to a formal welcome to the Kraft family, the new Rosh Chabura here in Chicago at the Friedman Home, 3472 Arthur. It's starting at 8 o'clock. Our next Kol Yom Rishon is going to be November 3rd, where we have Rabbi Yitzi Echelom and Rabbi Alan Schwartz. Thank you again for coming.
Thank you.